This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Sea cucumbers and fish maw might not strike you as likely characters facing threats of any kind, nor do they seem like the poster children for marine conservation. But a new report by the Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network, TRAFFIC, has outlined how the booming online trade of both sea cucumbers and fish maw in both Malaysia and Singapore, coupled with high levels of international trafficking, could endanger wild populations. So how is this important from an ecological point of view, and what could happen if regulators don't step up scrutiny and control? So I'm going to discuss this and more with Kanitha Krishnasamy. She's the Director for Traffic in Southeast Asia. Welcome, Kanitha. How are you today?
Hi, Jillian. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. Such a pleasure to have you back on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us back.
Yeah, always a pleasure. So how are things going at Traffic? How's everything there?
Good. It's been busy. In fact, we've been busy, COVID or not COVID. You know, traffickers have been busy. People conducting illegal wildlife trade have been equally busy. And that has, I suppose, by extension, kept us busy.
So, yeah, that never took a break, did it? We did see, I think, some sort of maybe less of it. I don't know. But yeah, it was still happening as we sort of faced the pandemic, and it continues to happen. And I mean, this was really interesting, this report. I mean, I tried Googling fish maw and sea cucumber, right? Mm-hmm. And the autofill Google result, search result that came out was a soup recipe. So I think that's generally what they're used for. And I guess it's a strange thing to some, right, to highlight sea cucumbers and maw fish. Can we get the basics out of the way? What exactly is the maw of a fish?
Okay. Fish maw is basically the swim bladder, and it is essentially the thing that allows the fish to swim. So it kind of sits between the liver and the stomach, and it functions kind of like a propeller in that it allows the fish to move up and down. And so most fish have it, meaning that fish maw can come from thousands and thousands of fish species.
Okay. I was reading it kind of helps them keep buoyant, right? Something along those lines, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So that's the maw of a fish, or pretty much in all fishes, right? And now, of course, there's sea cucumbers. I mean, I think which most people know, but for those who are unfamiliar, how would you describe those?
Well, yeah, they are a marine species with elongated bodies, right? They kind of look like tubes and they're shaped like a cucumber, hence the name. And they come in various shapes and sizes. You know, the small ones can be less than an inch, and then you've got the really, really big ones that can go over 6 feet. And globally, there are currently more than 1,000 species that have been described. And of these 1,700, it's been documented that, you know, at least about 70 of them or so are being harvested for consumption.
70
species, correct.
Okay, all right. And I think, as I mentioned, you know, soup recipes came up, right? And they are considered delicacies in Chinese cuisine. Am I correct? Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on that point? Why are they considered such delicacies?
Well, I guess they've really been, you know, long been part of history and the culture in the same way that shark's fin and abalone have been prized. You know, they've got health and prosperity values attached to them. And as you said, you know, right at the very beginning, they are thought largely as dried seafood, and you know, both sea cucumber and fish maw. But sea cucumbers are actually also prized for their use in traditional Malay medicine, and we know them locally as gamat. You know, we've seen gamat all around, you know, as we are growing up, and they have been used for a very, very long time. And it's used as a tonic to heal wounds or for smoother skin. And so they use also for supplements for health and beauty. And so it's not just about them being consumed as dried seafood, but there is a health and a sort of a beauty proportion that is attached to it as well.
Mm-hmm. So links to traditional medicine as well, and not just
absolutely,
not just Chinese delicacies. And I'm just curious to know, you know, what sort of price, I mean, if you know, what sort of prices do they fetch on the market? And I guess, what are the factors that determines the price that it eventually sells for?
Yeah, it does depend on several things, like form, you know, whether they are being sold in raw form or just whole parts, or derivatives, like I mentioned earlier, gamat, right? Mm. And price also, like for anything, it really depends on the species and weight. So for example, for a species that is more rare, they tend to fetch higher prices. And for derivatives that are processed into pills and vials, like those that you see in your gamut pills and gamut oils, then they're cheaper.
Okay.
You know, if you look online for minyak gamut, you can find them for as cheap as 1 or 2 ringgit on online platforms.
Okay.
Versus your whole sea cucumber, which can go for up to thousands of ringgit.
Wow.
Fish maw, for a lot of the rare species, can go up to 800 ringgit per kilo here in this country. And in the international market, they could go up to thousands and thousands of dollars, upwards of $3,000 to $4,000 in the international market.
Wow, that's huge. And, you know, as I was doing research for this, I came across this article, and this was from back in 2015, right? And this was how the craze for fish maw almost led to the wiping out of a Mexican fish, the totoaba. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
This is a really unique case. So the totoaba is essentially a very large marine fish, and it occurs only in the Gulf of California and Mexico.
Okay.
And unfortunately for this fish, it is being severely targeted for its maw. It's meant to be more precious, more delicious, and it's said to be more precious than gold in some places. And it's very commonly referred to as the cocaine of the sea. And if you look at articles that and investigations that have been conducted, it's linked to serious organized criminality. And in the black market, it can fetch up to $40,000 per kilo.
Wow.
So it's not that anybody can buy something like this. You know, you have to have serious money. And because it's sought after in such a manner, there is a high, very, very high level of organized criminality that is attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue with the totoaba is that it is caught using gill nets. And gill nets are a very popular fishing method used across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a gill net is basically, it's a wall of netting, right? So imagine a goalpost in the sea for several kilometers long.
Oh, wow.
And so it basically catches anything and everything that comes in its way, not just the species that you want. So the selectivity is very, very low with very high mortality. And this is exactly what happened in the case of the totoaba. While they were fishing for the totoaba, Baquita, another extremely unique porpoise—it's the tiniest porpoise in the world—was also caught.
Mm.
And in this particular case, the gill net has devastated two extremely unique species in the same ecosystem, and both the totoaba and the Baquita are critically endangered in the wild today.
Okay, but I do understand that finally they started realizing, you know, this terrible impact from it. So, like, you know, then like policies came into place, and there was some mitigation methods that were put into place, right, to protect them.
To some extent, yes, but because the demand for it is still there, and, you know, I mentioned earlier the prices. People are willing to pay such high prices, which means there are still people out there who are willing to do the crime.
Mm.
And so although measures have been introduced, the organized criminality element is still in play. And so because of that, these two species are not safe as yet. The picture, I think, okay, from recent research has shown there's less than 10 animals. So they're really, I don't know if anything can save them from extinction, but, you know, less than 10 animals is very little that can
goodness.
Be done.
And they're only found in this, you said, this particular place, right? In the Gulf of Mexico, or was that what you
correct,
said?
Correct, in Mexico.
Mexico. Oh my gosh, that's terrible. And they weren't even what was being sought after. That's horrible.
Exactly. And I guess, you know, that's what it does with fishing practices, with gill nets, right? And in this particular case, we know of these two very critically endangered species that are totally being hammered. But gill nets are very popular means of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you can imagine, it allows you the biggest catch, right? So for economies and for livelihoods, it's good because, you know, fishery supplies are, well, it's pretty abundant around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And gill nets are widely used across the world, including here in Malaysia.
Okay. All right. So that's something that we need to think about also when we're formulating policies and stuff, right? You know, the use of these sorts of nets and things like that. Am I correct?
Exactly. Because there have been a lot of cases, actually, even here in Malaysia, where the use of gill nets have, you know, species like marine turtles or sharks or dolphins have also been caught in these gill nets because they're out in the sea. Fishing is being done, and it doesn't discriminate what comes through its way. So yes, it's a delicate balance, I guess, you know, between figuring out what's good for fishing and livelihood versus what needs to be done to safeguard wild populations.
Okay. All right. We're just going to go for a quick break, Kanita. But when we come back, we're going to find out more about the most recent report that Traffic has released. I'm speaking today to Kanita Krishnasamy. She's the director for Traffic in Southeast Asia. We're talking about how sea cucumbers and fish maw, you know, if not protected and not looked into, the trade of them might lead to to endanger wild populations. We'll find out more after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Kanita Krishnasamy. She's the director for Traffic in Southeast Asia. Traffic is, of course, the Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network. Kanita has been there for a long time now. And today we're talking about a new report that's come out, which shows that the numbers of sea cucumbers and fish maw, which are being traded online quite robustly and really booming, the online trade is booming, and coupled with high levels of international trafficking, all of this could lead to the endangerment of wild populations. So before the break, Kanita, you were telling us a little bit about you know, the uses of fish maw and also sea cucumber. And I was reading another traffic policy brief, right? And this was called A Response to Trade in High-Value Marine Products Between Africa and Asia. It was released around the same time last year. And that sort of summarized studies into seahorse, sea cucumber, and the fish maw trade. And to quote the report, it painted a picture of population declines, inadequate regulation, stretched law enforcement, and local communities impacted by illegal and unsustainable catch and trade. Was that a fair assessment of what's going on?
Absolutely. It is, and you know, sadly, this really is the case for many species, especially when you're looking at marine and fisheries products that are caught and sold in millions of tons, right? Not for anything, to feed human consumption, right? We all eat fish. Everybody eats fisheries products. And so once you start looking at other species like sharks and rays, we've seen similar issues when it comes to the regulation, right? So the example that you talked about earlier was fish maw and seahorse and sea cucumbers. But this really applies to a whole range of marine fisheries products. Mm-hmm. Because it is so complicated, it's not always clear how much is being caught, how much is being imported, how much is being exported, how much is being re-exported. And so because it's so complicated, it's not always easy to know what you're eating when you're at the dinner table, right? You don't know if it's coming from a legal or a sustainable source.
So that is, and I was just curious also, what is the scale of the trade of these two items in particular, right? So fish maw and sea cucumber, because I was reading the report and it said it forms the quote unquote big four traditional seafood delicacies, which are widely consumed throughout Asia, right? And that's along with shark fin and abalone.
Correct.
Okay. And would you know what the sort of scale of the trade is? I mean, any vague sort of ideas?
Well, with fish maw, it's a little bit more complicated because, you know, as we established earlier, it comes from a whole range of really any kind of fish, really.
Yeah.
With sea cucumbers, well, the information really differs depending on where you are. There was one particular study that says that there are around 30 million sea cucumber fishermen globally, right?
Wow.
That's 30 million fishermen. So you can imagine what that means in terms of the volumes that are being harvested. The example that you quoted earlier from Traffic's work in Africa, in that particular study, they looked at what was Hong Kong's role, right? And it was found that Hong Kong is the largest importer for sea cucumber products in Asia. And they imported approximately 56 million kgs from around the world just in the past 8 years.
Gosh.
So it's a pretty massive business.
Okay. All right. And I keep saying this, objectively, right, they might not seem like the poster children for conservation. You know, you just think sea cucumbers? I just saw so many in Langkawi. But why should we be concerned about the unsustainable and illegal harvest and trade of these, you know, of sea cucumbers and of fish maw? I mean, how will that impact the ecology of the area?
Yeah, absolutely, Julian. I mean, look, these two aren't going to win any undersea beauty contest anytime soon, right? But they are such important parts of our ecosystem. They're so vital. Sea cucumbers, for example, they're kind of like the ocean's vacuum cleaner, right? Mm-hmm. They eat and they digest debris and algae and dirt, and they keep the ocean clean. They cycle the nutrients. And so if they're absent from the ocean, it impacts the productivity of the ocean, like coral reefs. A lot of our fisheries resources rely on healthy coral reefs. And so they're all linked. They're all part of the same ecosystem. And marine resources, marine species, they play such important roles in the environment. But people rarely see them for that value, you know, unless, you know, you're somebody who loves to dive and are associated to marine environments.
Yeah.
Most people living outside of those environments don't clearly see that value, that them being healthy in their ecosystem also means that there is a direct correlation to healthy food sources, to healthy economy, to healthy human needs. Mm. And so that's how they've been priced for, I guess, for a long time, right? And from centuries ago, they've been sought after, but over time, things have evolved. You know, modernization has diversified our food sources, the availability, and, you know, our economies have diversified so much today compared to historical times, right?
Okay.
And in more recent times, a lot of these species, they're not just being sought after because they've been consumed for centuries. They've evolved into sort of more luxury, exclusive status statements, right? Mm. Like what we talked about earlier. You know, who in their right mind, you know, centuries ago paid $40,000 a kilo for Totoaba fish maw, right? So it's not about that anymore. There is a huge evolution in how a lot of wildlife species, like fishery species, that are being sought after. And so we have to make responsible choices. We absolutely have to make a change and adapt to these choices, not just for today, but for the future.
Definitely. And I guess, you know, now I'd like to bring in the latest report that you guys have released, and that's called A Rapid Assessment of Online Trade in Sea Cucumber and Fish Maw, particularly in Malaysia and Singapore. I guess, you know, what sparked this study or this investigation in the first place?
Honestly, it was curiosity more than anything else, for two reasons. One was we started seeing so many reports of sea cucumbers being seized, being confiscated by law enforcement agencies across the world.
Okay.
They're also very, very popular in shops. I mean, you go to any mall, you pass through any traditional medicine outlet, you go to any sort of beachside shop in Peninsula Sabah, Sarawak, you find them very, very popularly available.
Okay.
But, you know, apart from the availability, we know from the conservation-related debates and discussions, many species are being impacted. The trade levels is a key threat to their survival. This is also being discussed, or rather was discussed, at previous CITES meeting, the convention that looks into international trade of species.
Yeah.
And then we started looking at, we started noticing that they were popping up on online trade platforms. It's not unusual, right? I mean, you pretty much buy anything you want online these days. And so, you know, sea cucumber and fish maw products were also there. But we really did not have a good picture of what the scale was in both Malaysia and Singapore because they're popularly consumed here. And so really that's why we decided to undertake this study.
Okay. All right. And the report, I mean, the findings were really interesting, right? Maybe you can walk me through some of the key findings.
Yeah, I guess the most stunning find for us was that, you know, researchers recorded more than five tons of both products in a matter of 2 hours over 11 days.
Wow.
Right? So that's pretty massive.
Yeah.
And I want to make another point clear. We're not saying that this is illegal, right? Let's be clear. This is all very likely 100% legal trade because it's been part and parcel of regulation and for consumption.
Yeah.
But I guess the concerning thing here is that we found some endangered species being offered. We found some species that are listed on CITES Appendix appendices, which means their international trade must be regulated by both import and export countries. And you don't get that level of detail from whatever you're purchasing online, right?
Yeah.
We found at least 13 countries were offering these products in any form, whether they were dried, full, frozen, or cooked. And I mentioned earlier, one of the things that piqued our interest was the sea cucumber seizure, right? Mm-hmm. This is pretty massive. We recorded, at least from open source data, 92 tons of sea cucumbers were seized globally since 2015. I can't even describe what 92 tons is. It's a pretty significant amount. And over six tons of that was confiscated just in Malaysia. And because of that volume, it placed Malaysia amongst the top five countries where sea cucumbers were confiscated.
Okay. All right. So we are quite an integral part in all of this as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And of course, you know, there are some recommendations that Traffic has made, right? I guess to make more sense of this trade and I guess, you know, with hopes to regulate it as well. Could you walk me through those?
Yeah. Our primary recommendation really is to look into the regulatory aspects. You know, we're not saying stop everything. We're saying, do we even know what's going on where the trade is concerned? Mm-hmm. Do we know what species are being caught? Do we know how much are being caught? Do we know how much of being caught is actually sold for local consumption here in Malaysia versus exports? Do we know how much is being re-exported? You know, there's so much that is not clear. And if you look at species that are being caught, for example, for the more threatened or endangered species, do we know if their status in the wild has a positive or a negative trend?
Yeah.
And because we're such a huge fishing community, we have a huge fishing community, I think we do need to understand better in terms of balancing out the needs between business and species survival. We talked earlier about the gum up products. You know, we don't know how often or how much these products are being sort of harvested and sold. And so our recommendation is very much hinges on the regulatory aspects for us to understand these things a little bit better. And more trade research can actually help us answer these questions. You know, how much more is available? We looked at one short rapid assessment with online availability, but we don't actually know how much is being sold out there in the markets. And I think, you know, the underlying issue is that we need to know what's going on so that we can introduce better measures right now before things become bad. You know, in some places, sea cucumber fisheries, because they're so active, it has caused population to crash. Okay. And governments have had to introduce measures either to control or ban fishing, right? Why do we have to wait for it to get to such a precarious state before we do something?
Precisely.
Rather than looking it into now, looking at it rationally, introducing control measures now that will allow trade to continue legally and sustainably. And this really is more of a win-win situation for all involved.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, like you said, there's just not enough information, right? So this is a first step, I suppose, right, to sort of gain more understanding about how this will impact our ecosystems and all of us as well. And that's actually my next question, you know. Again, I'm a bit of a troublemaker here in the office. And every time when I mention like fish maw and sea cucumbers, my colleagues were like, oh, what? Now we can't eat that, is it? So, you know, very frustrated at me and my sort of like, we must save the earth kind of measures. What would you like regular Malaysians and consumers of these products to, I guess, understand from all of this?
I guess, you know, the important thing from a consumer's perspective is be responsible in your purchasing and consumption. You know, don't take for granted what we've, you know, always done, always consumed, and to take it for granted that it's always going to be there, especially when we have so much more knowledge and information now that our consumption patterns can have an impact on species survival, right? So ask questions, you know, try and ask your restaurants or your businesses, you know, where these things are being sourced from. And it's not just about consumers, right? We also want the businesses and restaurants to also have that same, I guess, level of awareness and accountability. You know, they could consider informing consumers if they are getting it from legal and sustainable supplies. They can make that known. And that could have a positive impact on how not just businesses operate in terms of influencing other businesses, mm-hmm. but it could also encourage consumers to be more responsible. You know, having, I guess, you know, starting that conversation is really a first step. And it's not just about legality, as I said earlier. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we see is very likely legal, but legal does not necessarily equate to sustainability. And we're not thinking just about what we have and what we're doing today. We want to think about what we can have in the future, in the long term. And this isn't just about, you know, having these conversations or thinking about them around Chinese New Year or festivities, because both of these items are available basically all year round.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so this has to be a continuous discussion amongst businesses, amongst consumers, but also amongst regulators. Governments could think about maybe using labeling to try and raise awareness so that, you know, that can also be another spur to start the conversation, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And like you said, like, it's just to sort of understand more about this and to, we shouldn't wait until it's in a dire sort of situation before we act, right? We should start the mitigating now, pretty much.
Absolutely. Right. And, you know, because you said earlier, it's so common, things like fish maw can come from, you know, any number of bony fish. But in some cases, as we've discussed earlier, in the case of the totoaba, some of these more endangered species are also being sought after. The traffic research, for example, found a lot of eels and sturgeon being sort of associated as the sources of these fish maw. So we do need to get better at understanding just what our consumption pattern is having an effect to our population.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess there's a lot more that needs to be done with regard to this. But I guess, you know, before I let you go, Kanita, we've been talking a lot about, you know, impacts and how, you know, making personal choices. What role do you think culture plays in the conservation of fish maw and sea cucumbers as well? And, you know, would you have a final message for us as well?
Well, I think, you know, culture really plays a huge part in a lot of our decisions, perhaps much bigger than we realize it. And when we talk about conservation of species, this is so true, right? Our teachings and our belief systems are what we grow up with. It's, you know, culture is such a big part of all of us. And when we're talking about conservation of species, especially with what is being consumed or what has been consumed for a really long time, and we want to change and to adapt these going forward, I think culture is so much a part of that, and it requires exposure, it requires awareness, it requires education, especially in the world today. You know, everything is so fast-paced, right? Mm. Equally, that means that you can get any number of information in, you know, basically in a heartbeat, right? So there's so much information out there that can educate us, you know, is there something that we can shift or we can adapt that is not really going to cause a big problem for us, that is going to be good for us as well as the environment and for species survival? And ultimately, I guess, you know, the main message is to buy responsibly, to consume responsibly. And, you know, going back to what we talked earlier about having that conversation, you know, just don't be afraid to ask questions. I think these conversations have to take place between all sectors before we can actually make a change that is going to be enough of an impact that will safeguard species in the wild as well as safeguard both businesses and livelihoods.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kanita, for joining me today. And I guess, you know, if people would like to read that report or to find out more, they can just head to Traffic's website, right? And also all your social media channels just to keep updated.
Absolutely, yes. Everything's on our channel.
Okay. All right. So that's traffic.org, or you can follow them on their social media channels. My thanks again to my guest today. I was speaking to Kanita Krishnasamy. She's the director for Traffic in Southeast Asia. Traffic is, of course, the Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network. We were talking about how sea cucumbers and fish maw, there's a booming online trade of both of them here in Malaysia and Singapore in particular, and coupled with high levels of international trafficking, all of this could point to endangering their wild population. population. So before it becomes a problem, we really need to take action now. Again, just head to the website if you'd like to find out more. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.